You want Beth to say her name?
Hi, this is Kelly Edwards. I am here at Louisa County on August
25th.
And I am here with
Chris Watkins, the Director of Elections and General Registrar for Louisa County.
Beth Richardson, Assistant Registrar.
Curtis Haymore, Electoral Board.
Okay.
Chair.
So first, we have a few general questions. What is your biggest concern about the upcoming election?
You want me to? I don't know how.
However, y'all want to answer it.
You'll do most of my answer.
I think that the biggest concern that I have about elections now is the faith or trust in the election process and the misunderstandings and that kind of thing, and that's really carried over from 2020. But the good side of that is that people are learning more about the process, and it's giving us opportunities. Folks have been in here to talk to us about the process. We are able to explain the process to them and educate them some, and so that's kind of the upside of it. But it is misinformation and misunderstanding, lack of trust, confidence is a big hurdle for us.
And I'm hoping we can help with that, but that's a great...
Well, I mean, everybody that we talked to, I mean, last November, right. We talked to lots of folks, I'm one-on-one sure. In here, and once we explained to them our chain of custody, our how we handle our ballots,
right.
How we account for our ballots, and they understand the process.
I think that...
And it also helps us, for the more people that understand what we do and how complex this job, it helps... with when we have to go to the Board of Supervisors and ask for more money, or, you know, just general education and people understanding the process is a good thing.
Right. Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, personnel, and training needed to run an effective election in November?
I think overall, yes. We have a good relationship with our county. We have a good relationship with our IT department. We get lots of support from them. We do battle a little bit with them with salaries and that kind of thing. But I do think overall, you know, with early voting, you know, whatever we need to do to implement early voting and be successful, in the end, they'll support us on that.
Okay. The county election board is supposed to consist of two Democrats and a Republican under a Democrat governor. But in some areas, boards have had trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead, or another Democrat. What is the situation in this county?
We have two Democrats and one Republican.
Two Democrats, one Republican. Okay.
And always have, right?
Mm-hmm. We've always been in compliance with whatever
right.
The governor is. Right.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
I mean, a lot of the counties I've been to, luckily, have had this, so I've not run into that problem yet, maybe one. What about precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans?
I'll try that. We have equal numbers of chiefs and assistant chiefs, so we make sure that every precinct has a Democrat and Republican chief and assistant chief, whichever
okay.
mix it is. And we have a mix of... political supporters in each precinct, but it's not evenly split.
Okay.
And we have a fair number of people who identify as independents who won't choose, but have served for a zillion years and are great workers, and they so that it all works out fine. So we have a good representation, but we've never tried to make everything exactly equal.
Okay.
But for every important job that requires a Democrat and Republican to do it, we do it.
You can't, okay.
That's...
Okay. Is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round or mostly near elections?
I'll answer that. They're very involved.
Okay.
We couldn't operate without them. I mean, and Curtis and I just had that discussion earlier this
okay.
morning that this county has been fortunate that we've had a board that's always been involved. They have a lot to do, and I think they're a little bit misled when they're brought on that they just meet close to the election time, and they're, you know, not given a real good understanding of how much is required, but it's a lot required
okay.
of them, and they do fulfill that. I mean, we did our training for our poll books last night, and the board handled that, and you know, it's just, they're very involved.
Okay.
They write manuals, they write the cybersecurity, they write chain of custody, right. All that.
Okay. Now a few questions on the voter roll. When was the last time the voter file in your county was scrubbed or cleaned?
7 o'clock this morning.
Okay.
I took all four deceased people. Yes. I mean, it's all ongoing here. And I think that a rural locality has probably a little bit of an advantage to a big city or because Beth and I've lived here a long time. We know a lot of people and, you know, if we know of someone that's deceased, we can go on to the funeral home websites and pull them. We get them out of the local newspaper. So we do that as ongoing in this locality.
That's awesome. Does the health department, coroner, or Bureau of Vital Statistics send a list of deceased people to your office every month? So, they
so I
can
think
be
you
aware.
Probably figured yes. out how that works yes. by now. That goes to elect. They push it out to us into the death hopper, not somewhere you want to be.
Yes, you were right. I have figured that out.
So they push that out to us. And list maintenance is done regularly, yeah. And we process, our hoppers are processed daily. I mean, they're emptied out every day.
Okay. When was the last time the clerk of court submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
I don't think we've ever gotten that list.
Yeah. I did run across, I think one of them had gotten it, but then the person actually ended up being a citizen, you know, like.
It seems to me, I mean, I've been here 20 years, it seems to me that one time, years and years ago, we did get something like that, but we've
not gotten
anything
a long
like
time.
That in recent history, no.
When was the last time you had access to the National Change of Address List, or any other change of address list?
So they did that in July.
Some of these I could almost fill in before you.
Yeah.
Are you confident that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
I mean, I'm as confident as I can be. We do everything we know to do, you
right.
know, to keep the rolls clean. And, you know, people move a lot and, you know, we have several inactive voters where, you know, they separate from their spouse or whatever.
Right.
But they still get mail at their parents, whatever. I mean, but we do everything we can do to try to keep them. We have a good relationship with our Commissioner of the Revenue, so we can cross-check addresses that way when we get undeliverable mail and things like that. We call them. We do everything.
Okay.
I would say we do everything we can do to try to keep our rolls accurate.
How many households in your locality have more than 7 individuals registered at the same address?
So outside of, I mean, we have a commune here. We have a nurse. We have 2 nursing home facilities. I know that there's more than 7 people registered at those kinds of places, but single family residences, we wouldn't have any way of knowing that.
Okay.
But it's also not ever been apparent. I mean, it's not that we couldn't, I mean, none of us could even think of an instance where that was the case.
Right.
We have poll workers in each place, you know, and stuff. It's nobody's ever commented that.
You know, hey, there's
nobody's ever
people.
Noticed.
No, but last night at training, they watched it, and one of them brought me over, and they're like, you know, he passed this week, and I'm like, I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really
on
that kind of
right,
stuff.
Yeah.
But nobody's ever mentioned that.
Right.
To me. And they are, another one said, my daughter's still on here. She lives in New York. I'll get that taken care of tomorrow. So, you know, they do pay attention to that when they're looking through their rolls.
Right. And I think the City of Richmond Registrar, he said he was going to look into it some way that he thought he might be able to pull it for the city. But most of the people, when I've come to the outlying counties, they said, you know, it just hasn't come up or has been an issue, and they don't know how they would, you know.
Well, and I mean, with the census having just been done, you could probably back into it maybe that way, some way, you know, to, like, if there are 10 people at this house for the census, we could check that address or something.
Right.
But other than searching every single address individually,
right.
seeing how many people come up,
right.
that'd be the only
that
way
would be
able to do it.
Okay. During registration, how do you certify the voters or citizens? And I'm going to go ahead and start writing.
But there's no way for, I mean, they're the box. They check it under penalty of law.
Yes, that's, okay. Yes. All right. Moving on. Concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and integrity of voting machines in the 2020 elections. There are three types of voting machines used in Virginia. Can you tell me which machines you use?
Yes, we have the Dominion ICE voting machine, and that stands for Image Cast Evolution.
And I think there's four or five, actually.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah.
Four or five?
Right, there's at least four certified vendors in the
Okay. Oh, and more than three. Okay.
Right.
Let me make a note of that. Who calibrates the voting machines?
So that is done during LNA testing,
okay.
Logic and accuracy testing, mm-hmm. which the Electoral Board oversees our logic and accuracy testing. And our vendor, if he does the, if something needed to be calibrated, he would calibrate it when he's here for LNA testing.
But
that was mainly with a calibration, I think, is mainly with the touchscreen machine. And when we did that, we did it calibration at LNA. Our poll workers knew how to do calibration. But with these new scanners, that's not something that we typically have to do.
Okay.
Vendor does the programming and we do the LNA test.
Right.
Okay.
Do you want to tell her about LNA?
And we do a very good thorough LNA.
LNA, okay.
We have 390 ballots for our LNA.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah.
It's, I guarantee you it's the most in the Commonwealth.
That's really great. I'm happy to hear that.
So.
Because that is a concern. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yes.
No, yeah. So we, for each ballot style, though, we create a test deck. Actually,
we do have the test deck here.
You
do. We just got it. This is our most do, I don't know how many most do, but this is our test deck.
Okay. So you guys got that filled
no,
in?
No, they're not filled in yet, but this is how many ballots have to be marked.
And so y'all will mark all those and run them.
Yeah, so the way we do it is we make sure that each candidate, including write-ins, has a unique number of votes.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the tape comes out, we know both that it's counting correctly and it's not switching any two positions. So for governor, there's one person, they're only going to have one vote. The next guy's only going to have two votes. The next guy's going to have three votes total. So when you, the tape, when you're done, you know both counted it correctly and there was no switching involved. So for most of the ballot styles this time, there's about 40 to 60, mm-hmm. depending on how many races are in that, on that ballot.
One of them has 90, I think. It's a lot.
And we have nine ballot styles.
And we have nine ballot styles.
Okay, that's great. I mean,
it's very thorough.
Yeah.
And they like to
yes.
And we have instructions about, you know,
face up,
orientation
face down.
That yeah. it gets
it's
fed
very
in too.
Precise.
Okay.
Face up, face down, back, front.
Right.
Every and, ballot and, is fed in a certain way.
And we have a blank ballot to make sure that it alerts for blank ballots and overvotes. So we have ballots
that's
to,
awesome.
To check the overvote function. So. We're very confident of our machine.
Okay. Do you invite the party representatives to witness?
Yes, that's required by the code. We'll notify the yes. party chairs when we're doing LNA and the time and the place.
And can I ask you, do they usually show up?
They have at times.
Okay.
And it seems like they'll show up once, realize how boring it is.
Right.
Yeah. And how thorough.
And well, and how thorough. The other side of that is that our electoral board members are also, you know, the
right.
parties know them and
right.
have confidence in them, and they know they're going to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Are your voting machines ever connected to the internet?
No.
Okay. And if they're not connected to the internet, how and when are they updated?
Thumb drives.
For LNA, usually LNA testing.
Okay. All right. Many changes in election procedures were introduced in response to the COVID pandemic, and some people have argued that these changes weakened the integrity of the election process. As an election professional, do you think the changes made in the process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened election integrity, strengthened election integrity, or made no change?
It's my job to make sure that every voter, that every person that wants to be registered to vote is mm-hmm. registered to vote, and everybody that wants to vote votes and to follow the code of
right.
vote, and that's what we do.
Okay.
I would say it actually fostered participation.
As of right now, right. that is.
It's made more people
yeah.
participate in the voting.
Our town election, you had 50 or 60 people. We had 300 people.
Well, we, so for that, because that was at, town elections are held in May, and mm-hmm. we had to start absentee voting in April, and at the end of March, and so it was right at the beginning of the pandemic, and we didn't know what was going to happen. There were so many unknowns. So what we talked, we had conference calls, and we mailed every single voter an absentee ballot and said
an absent application.
The application, right.
Right.
Please.
We mailed them the absentee ballot application, and we didn't, we still had our precinct open. We didn't say we're not going to have our precinct open.
Right.
But we said we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And we encouraged absentee voting. And so we sent the ballot, the application out to all the voters, and okay. we had the biggest turnout we've ever had for
okay.
The town election. So
well, that's great. Good people involved.
Yeah.
Even
it brought it to their attention.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you receive any funding or in-kind contributions for training staff, voter education, or equipment, or any other purpose from outside the state of Virginia?
Yes, we had one grant. And then we had the CARES Act money also.
And what was the funding used for or contribution used for?
Primarily for staff for early voting. And we bought a tent for curbside voting.
Yeah.
So it was mainly for early voting, different items for early voting.
Okay. Effective July 1st, 2021, Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballots for any election during a declared state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. How are you training staff to ensure that there is a signature for the upcoming elections?
Are you speaking about on the ballot return envelope and just making sure that there is a signature?
Yeah, I think that's...
So for the ballot cure process or how we review those ballots mm-hmm. when they come in here is that it's usually either Beth or myself or some of our CAP workers are mm-hmm. working here in the office during early voting. And they check the ballot to make sure that it is, you know, that it has a signature and a witness signature.
Okay.
And the instructions say, you know, that the witness is required. And so we'll check that. And if it's not there, then we would notify the voter.
Okay.
And so it's just to make sure that the signatures are on there.
Okay. There is a lot of concern in Virginia and across the country about the security and integrity of the ballot drop boxes. What are your chain of custody procedures for ballot drop boxes?
Curtis, you jump in here, sure. But I'll start out. So there are two different things. So we have a box out in that glassed-in vestibule area that
okay.
is the ballot drop box that we use for, like, prior to Election Day.
Okay.
And that's available 24/7.
Okay.
And it has cameras on it. And
it gets relabeled during the election.
Yeah.
Right now it's for everything.
Okay.
At times of the election, we relabel it.
Okay.
And we have control of that. Nobody checks that box but us, and
we
two people check
that.
It.
Okay.
And we have a form that's supplied by the department that every time we go out there and check it, we record the date, the time, who went, we sign it, how many ballots we got out of it.
How many, just curious, how many drop boxes do y'all have through the county? Is it just this
only prior to Election Day, only one, that one.
Okay.
And it is available 24/7.
Okay.
And there's a camera on it.
And it's a camera on it.
And it's actively monitored by the sheriff's department downstairs.
Okay.
We don't review tapes.
Right. It's monitored
by... I'm going to go ahead and fill in these next two questions as y'all talk.
So it's monitored as all the security cameras are monitored here at the county building. And if we needed to be notified of something that happened, then we would be notified for us to review it.
Okay.
But then on election day, we have ballot drop bags at every precinct.
As the state requires.
As the state requires. And when that bag leaves here, it has a chain of custody with it. It has a tamper evidence seal on it.
Okay.
It goes to the precinct.
Okay.
We put the seal on it. It goes to the precinct. The precinct verifies that the seal was not broken. And then ballots can be dropped. It's at the chief's table, monitored throughout the day. And then at the end of the day, two people break the seal. And they have that same form to fill out. So they'll put the date, time, who opened the bag, how many ballots were in there, and they sign that. They put another seal on it and record and sign that.
Okay.
So put them back in.
They put the ballots back in there, seal the bag back up, put a seal back on it, record that.
Okay.
And so when it's... So there's always a seal, a numbered seal on the bag.
If the seal is taken off, then there's always...
Yeah, okay. And there's a chain of custody...
form that goes...
There's really kind of two chain of custody forms. There's the form regarding how many ballots are in the bag,
mm-hmm.
and there's the form regarding the seal numbers.
Okay.
And that.
And then they bring it back directly to this office.
Right.
When they bring in the rest of the ballots and stuff. They go to the clerk's office for everything else, and they drop that here.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Required by the law.
Very thorough. Thank you. All right. So to strengthen public confidence in the integrity of elections, we hope to expand our observation efforts and have a few questions about election pages, nonpartisan observers, and party observers. And this is our last little page of questions, guys. Would you provide training and support or designate us to provide training and support for an election day page program as described in 24.2-604.3.
So we have a page program.
Okay.
We've had one since 2013, I think, and we coordinate that through the government teachers at the high school. We've already gotten the applications to them, and they collect them, and then we bring them back here, and we try to assign them to a precinct close to their home. They work a half a day shift, and they work like 6 a.m. to 1 or 1 to 7, and they do things like, you know, be like a greeter.
Right.
They just help out in the precincts, and we train them. We go to the high school and have a one-day training for them, so they get written instructions. Sometimes we even give them a kind of a script to read, especially if we have referendums on the ballot and that kind of thing.
Right.
They really help with that, but our page program has been pretty successful. They get a they wear a vest that day that kind of designates, that separates them out so people know. And the folks in the community really like seeing the young people involved in it.
Oh, I'm sure. It sounds great. Would you authorize nonpartisan election observers with the same rights as party representatives as described in 24.2-604.5A.
I'm trying to look that up. Can you help me with that part of the answer? So there's two things with observers. We certainly allow observers as allowed, and it's usually the party people, but they have to have their letter.
Right.
And one of the things we found, we've had a few more observers in different positions this time. They wanted to come and watch the CAP process, Central Absentee Precinct. And what we found was that they were disruptive, not intentionally.
Right.
But they were asking questions. They didn't know what was happening, they couldn't figure out various things. And that became intrusive because people are sitting there trying to do stuff. They didn't have time to, as different people came in to explain the process. So Chris was going to set up a training session for observers who wanted to come in so we could explain what they're going to see so that they can watch without necessarily disrupting the process.
So when they came in, we could go ahead and get started.
Yeah, right.
But we've never had a request for
outside.
Anybody else outside. And if somebody did, I think that
we could consider that. I mean, okay. Yeah, but as long as they were doing the right rules. I mean,
right.
There's very strict rules about the observers. There's a certain place they can sit at the polling station. They have to be close enough to hear, but they can't engage. I mean, as long as they know the rules and we have the space to accommodate.
Right.
There's probably one precinct where it'd be very hard to accommodate more than we ever get.
Right.
I mean, it's a tiny church.
Yeah.
There isn't space behind people to have observers. We have nothing against it, but if somebody else was coming in and would want to know about it, we'd have to tell the chiefs, make sure the chiefs knew that what was going on, and we'd have to be sure that they knew what the rules were.
Okay. Would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
Same answer. Yes.
Okay. Have your local party chairs been notified that they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it is open and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
We notify them of everything that we're doing pretty much.
Okay.
We always sent an email every time we did pre-processing. We notify them when we're doing LNA testing. They're pretty engaged people too.
Right.
So. And in the last election, we had somebody here several days
hanging
out until they realized how deadly.
Okay.
And we didn't have a lot of space, so we couldn't accommodate a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have a publication that you provide to your election officials regarding rights and responsibility of observers, which we kind of touched on?
And
okay. All right. Thank you. The survey is complete now. We deeply appreciate your time today. And look forward to keeping in touch with you guys as we go through 2021 and beyond. I'm going to go ahead and end the recording, but I do appreciate you guys.